Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 21, Episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For March 9th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Biz Jack Biombo Brian.
Oh, this
is courtesy of Weston B. Shout out to the Orlando Magic, also.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
You look so natural, no one can tell, just for Mangel. Now, with a touch of Miles Gray.
Now, that is an AKA I've been getting for a long time by many people. The last person I read it from is Jose Antonio Reyes. Shout out to you, great Arsenal player. I know that's not who you actually are. But also, to the many people who have suggested it, thank you. It's reached a tipping point.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat for our 101st episode, the hilarious comedian and podcast host, Caitlin Durante.
Hi.
Hello.
Episode 101.
101.
Wow. 101.
Caitlin 101.
Caitlin 101.
Class you can take when you're a freshman.
Exactly. What's the subtitle of the class? Caitlin 101.
Learning. Oh God.
Learning. Learning.
Okay. Period.
Caitlin Durante 101. Learning. Blessed.
Caitlin, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I recently, in fact yesterday, did a Google search for the film I, Frankenstein. Because I wanted to see if its title was the same format, like I, comma, name as I, Tanya.
Yeah.
And then I was wondering if those movies
prequel.
Take place in the same universe.
I think
they do.
Yeah.
And they do? It adds up?
It, as far as my research shows, yes.
And what has your cohort Jamie thought of this? Have you brought this to Jamie's attention?
Yes.
Jamie Loftus, who we all know and love, who's massively obsessed with I, Tanya.
And I, Frankenstein, believe it or not.
Really?
She loves I, Frankenstein. Oh. She knows it's terrible. So the reason that I looked it up is because she had mentioned it on an episode of the Bechdelcast that I was editing. And I was just like, I wonder if there's something to this I, Frankenstein, I, Tanya
and
thing.
What about I, Robot?
I forgot to.
Okay, well, hey, you know. Yeah. Is she getting her Twitter back? I think she's getting her Twitter back, right?
I hope so.
Maybe. Okay, update. We'll keep you updated.
I, Frankenstein is a Max Brooks joint, right? Or not Max Brooks, Max, the terrible Max.
Max Landis?
Max Landis, yeah.
Oh, is it?
I believe so.
Oh.
I believe so.
That tracks.
Yeah, it certainly does. Caitlin is...
Oh, wait, no. Stuart Beattie.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said. Caitlin, you co-host the Bechdelcast with
That's right.
Jamie Loftus.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to make sure you knew that. Cool. All right.
So, oh, yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks.
Right.
Yeah, because you have a lot of stuff written on your hands that were like really basic information. We wish if you forgot that.
Just,
too.
My name is Caitlin. My class is Caitlin 101.
Learning.
Learning.
What is something you think is underrated?
I think the thrift shopping is underrated. I don't do it that much because I don't shop that much, but when I do, it's probably at a thrift store.
Because I'm going to pop some tags.
Yes, Macklemore had it right all along. I hate buying stuff and I hate like contributing to like the gross consumerism of that we're all doing. So I like to just buy used crap. And honestly, all the clothes that I bought that were at a thrift store are better than all the clothes that I bought at a non-thrift store. Because turns out very bad at picking out clothes for myself. But if it's like something that someone else bought and have discarded.
Like, oh, they took the risk.
And I'm like, and then it just like always fits me better and it looks nicer. So I just like can't be trusted to shop for myself. So then I have to have something that someone else.
I also like the fact that the sales clerks, as young people call them, the people who the sales associates,
they help you out of your handicap spot when you arrive at the thrift store.
No, they don't give as much of a shit about you. Like, whereas I feel like when you go shopping at like a normal store, there's sometimes like that pressure. They're like, "Hey, how's it going in there?
You
look great, man." You know, they like really are putting on the full court press. And I feel like at thrift stores, they just are like, "Yeah, whatever, man."
Well, like Crossroads, like those ones that we have in LA and stuff, they're almost like encouraging or be like, "Oh, I want that." Like I remember I'd bring something up. They'd be like, "Oh, I was going to get that." And I was like, "Okay, so should I fucking put it back? Like, what the fuck?" It's like the almost opposite where they almost care a lot about it because I know they just be watching. They're like, all right, when the customers leave, then we can swoop in.
Right. Caitlin, what's something that's overrated?
The Shape of Water.
Now, as I understand it, it takes the shape of whatever container it's in.
Gosh,
Holy shit.
I'm on fire today, guys.
Yeah, you're with that horn.
I'm upset.
No, don't go, Kaylin. Please sit down. Please sit back down.
So what, you're not a fan of the movie?
It's not even that.
That marinade.
I watched it. I generally liked it. Do I think it deserved the Best Picture Academy Award? No, I don't. I was very upset that Get Out did not win, and I'm still just processing that information, and I'm not happy about.
Well, as we said, you know, or on Monday's episode, the Academy Award is more like a barometer to see where the industry's at. So we got close, right? We nominated it, and we gave it the best screenplay. We weren't quite ready to take it there yet, and we kept it safe, and we're like, okay, let's empower a woman who does not speak and a sexy sea monster.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, I think it just overtook The Last Jedi in box office sales in Mexico.
Did it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which makes sense. I mean, they should be wilding out in the streets.
Yeah. And it did have that character, like we talked about. It has scenes of old movies, and it has a character who's like a real cinephile, which I feel like that stuff is just like thrown in there to be like, hey.
Right.
Movies are important, huh?
You know, right? Everyone talks about how they wanted to know what the creature's penis looked like.
Right.
My thing is, I want to know how bad Michael Shannon's finger smelled.
Oh.
That, like, came
off. I thought
you were
going to say you wanted to know what Richard, what's-his-name's penis looked like.
No, because
so weird,
I don't
Miles.
Know, man, when I saw him with that, like, rotting fingers, like, oh, God, that thing. And my first thing goes, that thing has to stink.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And nobody's really paying that off in his scenes, but you know, whatever. I feel like other people, if he gestures, they should be like, oh fuck,
right,
that nasty dead finger near me.
Yeah, they did do a good job of kind of evoking that.
Yeah, because it did over time get worse and worse and worse, and eventually he was like, nah, fuck it. Like,
yeah, just ripped.
I think if I were to make one critique about the movie, it would be that his character, I love him as an actor, but his character was just like so over the top, like evil guy. Like, then we have to see him, like, have sex with his wife and, like, tell her to be quiet. It was like, ugh, why is that happening?
I'm glad but did you read that thing during the Oscars? He just watched it at a bar in Chicago with it on mute.
The movie?
No, the Oscars.
Oh, really?
He watched the Oscars. He didn't even go. He was like, he watched it at a dive bar on a TV, and the TV was on mute, and he was like, whatever.
I respect that.
That guy fucking rules.
Yeah, he's and a prolific, like, musician, too. Well, not prolific, but, like, he performs. He gets out there.
No
really?
Yeah.
What kind of music?
Like, rock. Nick and I were watching a clip of him. He was, like, he did a cover of, like, Iggy Pop that was actually pretty good.
And vocalist, or?
Yeah. He's on vocals.
All right.
I'll have to remember to link to that in the footnotes.
Yeah. Have you seen Take Shelter?
No.
That's worth seeing if you like him. He really really goes for it. All right. Let's get into format. We are trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now at the moment that we record it. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guest, what is something that people believe to be true that you know to be a myth? Caitlin.
Oh, man. I really I'm going to regret this.
Uh-oh.
Well, it's just dumb, and
well,
I don't even
do it.
I know. Well, it's the only thing I have. I was just gonna say that based on my personal experience, the myth that
9/11 was an inside job.
That single people are lonely. That's not true. We're very lonely. No. I don't know. Like, single people are, you know, just often painted as, like, we're, like, sad losers.
Right,
and right.
As a single person, I only feel like that some of the time.
But that's not your daily mode of operation.
No, exactly. Yeah. I've got all – I brag I have a bunch of friends, so I hang out with them.
I have nieces and nephews. Don't need kids.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want kids anyway, so I'm fine.
Well, there you go.
What do you do? Like, are there times when you look at sort of people that are in relationships and you go, thank God I'm single?
Yeah. Just like couples bickering about stupid stuff and like couples that are together that don't seem that compatible. And I'm just like, what is that? What's everyone doing?
And then what's the thing when you see couples and you're like, damn, I wish I was single?
Well, I hang out with mostly single people also, so, like, I don't even interact with couples that often.
Oh, wow. they're gross, and I don't want to be near them.
Like, you have a problem with people. It sounds like.
I hate love, is what
I'm saying. Oh, that's dope.
Just to sort of second what you're saying, that Shape of Water joke was courtesy of me not getting much sleep last night because of children. So you're on the right path with that one.
Oh, sure. How's your baby?
Great.
Oh, God. He's wearing his hoodie backwards again.
All right. This is why I'm just completely off today.
We gotta get you like an EpiPen or something.
I know, man.
Just hit you with that. Or adrenaline shot.
Adrenaline shot in the heart.
Mm-hmm. Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction style. Yeah.
And before nurses start going, that actually wouldn't happen, just let me live in that fantasy world.
All right, let's get into the stories of the day. We had a huge surprise breakthrough yesterday. Of course, on Trump-Free Thursdays, we found out that Trump is going to sit down face-to-face with the leader of North Korea, and we as a country are apparently just going to let that happen. We're just going to be like, yeah, that's what we want
that
to happen.
That sounds good.
But yeah, North Korea is like specifically requesting this, which makes sense because it seems like every time someone sits down with President Trump, he ends up just sort of by osmosis just taking on whatever their opinion is.
Right.
And so I don't know. I have not been overly impressed with his negotiation skills, and I doubt that the North Korean delegation has been impressed by his negotiating skills. So the fact that they're directly requesting him is pretty telling, I would guess.
He's very eager. So, like, I know there's a South Korean delegation in D.C. right now, and they were supposed to meet today about this. But the second Trump found out, he was like, yes, I want to do it. Get the South Koreans in here now. And they're like, oh, we're meeting with them tomorrow. He's like, I want to meet now. And then they came in and he told them, like, yes, I want to do this. And they were even caught off guard. They're like, oh, I thought we would maybe have some talks about what this means or whatever. He's like, no, I want to do it.
He's a thirsty little bitch.
And then they're like, yo, we didn't even tell our own president, President Moon. Like,
right.
And he's like, well, get him on the phone then. And then they did. And he was like, oh, so I guess, well, then we're meeting.
They, like, mention it in, like, the waiting area, and he just, like, bursts through the door. Like, yeah. He's, like, been listening. You guys want it? Yeah, I'll do it.
Can I take credit for this?
Right.
Even though, clearly, South Korea has been putting in a lot of legwork, especially during, like, the Olympics and stuff to get us to this point. But, again, who knows where this will lead, if this is clearly part of the chess game that North Korea is playing with us. And also, like you said, Jack, he will just mirror whoever he's in the room with. Like, when it came to gun control, he was basically saying, like, yeah, we'll take their guns away and then we'll do due process later. What's he going to do with fucking Kim Jong-un? And be like, oh, yeah, like, I think you need more nukes. You should buy them from us. I'll give you a great deal. And then he'll, like, he's going to fucking tout that. Like, oh, yeah, so I went through and I actually sold him a bunch of shit. Like,
right. I mean, I guess one argument people are making is that Trump's bravado and sort of, you know, openly talking shit to Kim Jong-un is the thing that got him to the table, which doesn't really make sense. But I think a more rational argument could be that his rhetoric around North Korea and openly, you know, talking about starting a planet-destroying nuclear war with North Korea scared South Korea enough to spur them into action, into negotiating for this sit down, which I'm assuming Trump supporters are arguing was his intention all along.
Right. Really. Or you could even say that North Korea was just doing so much inflammatory, like, testing of missiles that got people scared enough that they wanted to finally come to the table to them, because I know Kim Jong-un has always just wanted to be legitimized as a leader, and now he kind of has that because now the president is meeting with him. So I guess it's like anything. We really won't know till we know. But yeah, I think every dimension can be argued, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I'll be interested to hear, like, the crooked media folks talk about, like, if Kim Jong-un requested an audience with Obama, like, I doubt Obama would have been like, yes, yeah, let's do it. You know, I'm sure they would have been pretty careful about agreeing to something like that. But my role in the Obama administration
was very limited. Yes.
Yeah, I can't speak authoritatively.
Some called you an outsider.
Some did call me that. And
some called you, hey, what did we tell you about sneaking into the White House again?
Now, this is a question I want to open up to the room. Yesterday, after this news, I went to Drudge Report because I always like to see how the right is responding to stories like these that scare the shit out of me. Like, can they possibly think this is a good idea that we're going to have Donald Trump sit down with, like, the fate of the world, like, in the balance? And the headline was on the Drudge Report, "Donald does it again! Exclamation point. Surprise talks with North Korea." What the fuck could they possibly be talking about? Like, what, first of all, what is...
What did he do again?
Right. I guess they're suggesting that it's his doing that they got this talk with North Korea, even though it wasn't. It was South Korea, like, doing all the negotiating. But what was the first thing he did that they think was good?
I don't know. Maybe the tax scam.
Oh.
Maybe the deal he made with Stormy Daniels.
Huh. Yeah, that was a pretty good deal.
That was a good deal that they worked out. And I mean, it's just scary too because, I don't know. Is there anybody working in the State Department? Like, we don't even have, like, fucking diplomats. Like, that are, like, what our top South Korean diplomat quit last week or the week before. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's why Rex Tillerson was really careful about saying, like, no, these are going to be talks, not negotiations. Cause clearly we cannot have Donald Trump negotiating shit like in live in person. Cause I'm sure they would be like, wait, what'd you say? Can we write that down? Okay. So you're going to say that you're selling us nuclear weapons now. Okay. Great.
Right. And we'll he likes to go off prompter is the scary thing.
He loves that jazz.
He likes to sit down with foreign leaders and just not have anybody there kind of hemming him in.
I don't know. Look, it's better than all the, like, I'm gonna fuck you with my rocket type talk that he's been doing. My dick also works type shit that he was saying. Like, I'd rather him be talking about meeting or whatever than the rhetoric of, like, hey, we can fucking vaporize your whole shit.
He did say that, right? He was like, my button is bigger and it works.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
There's just, that is... This presidency is the gift that keeps giving. Like, because you get a little distance from it. You, like, forget that a thing happened and then are reminded of it. And, yeah, that's amazing that he said that.
He literally said, and mine works. Like,
yeah. Good for him.
It's bigger. It's redder.
Yeah.
It workers.
Which is weird, but whatever. And, yeah, I guess we might as well bring up the Stormy Daniels thing while we're on the president, right? Because that is something that happened during Trump Free Thursdays.
Yeah, more developments.
More developments in the Stormy Daniels deal. Her lawyer is suing for her to be released from the deal because the deal hasn't been countersigned by David Dennison.
And also, Sarah Huckabee Sanders alluded to the fact that there was a secret arbitration, like that he tried to fight, like the president was trying to file a restraining order against her to not speak about it. And that's another reason why they need to nullify the agreement, because they're like, we're not even interested in doing these, like, secret arbitrations, just bullshit, because y'all didn't even sign the contract.
Right.
It's an interesting move because it puts Trump in a position where, like, he has to basically acknowledge that this happened now. Like,
right.
Either way, because he can feign ignorance all he wants, but if there was an agreement, then he has to obviously be aware that there was an agreement that was being entered into.
Right.
It's just...
Because it was... So the deal was, like, Stormy Daniels, her lawyer, his lawyer... And then David Dennison is his, like, for whatever reason, his, like, role-playing name.
Yeah, I don't – yeah, they had really cool pen names.
And that was left blank. And so they were like, oh, why don't you sign it then? If it didn't happen, why, like,
right, 'cause then
let us out of it. And if it did happen, you need to sign it or else we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that was kind
of
brilliant.
It's like, yeah, well, then you have to acknowledge, right, because you gave him power of attorney. So then you knew. And then if you're saying, oh, well, you know, I don't know anything, then that means it is void.
Right.
And now she can tell whoever she wants to. But I don't know if she's necessarily interested in doing that. But
wait, can you give me a little backstory on what this?
So Stormy Daniels, an adult film actress who the President Trump had an affair with, and then she signed a NDA type thing.
Hush where agreement.
She signed her right to talk about the affair over to Michael Cohen, who is the President Trump's right-hand flunky lawyer and sort of like has probably beat people up and maybe killed
people. He has
no
moral scruples
for Donald Trump. He paid her $130,000, I believe it was, in part with this agreement, but he didn't actually pay her quickly enough, which is part of the reason that she started getting pissed off. And so she wants to be able to talk about it because she realized like she probably sold that too cheaply. Mm. I'm guessing is where this is coming from. And they're pointing out that Trump never countersigned the agreement. So she's like, I want to sue to make this null and void. So that's one aspect of the story, is she wants to be able to come out and like tell the full story. She has been, up to this point, she was on Kimmel, and Kimmel was like, so can you nod if you had an affair with the president? And she, you know, she hasn't been able to actually talk about it.
And is of this Trump agreement. Denying every, they
He's
had a
relationship?
He's
saying they never had an affair. Okay. But then it's like this weird logical sort of empty space, because it's impossible for them not to have had an affair, because they're also bragging that they won this arbitration over her right to talk about their affair.
Which confirms
that they had an affair. So
it's a lose-lose situation right now. Yeah.
Yeah. For people who like to think that the president is playing four-dimensional chess, he just got destroyed in like three-dimensional or two-dimensional chess by Stormy Daniels mm-hmm. and her attorney. So there's that issue. And then there's also the potential issue that if Cohn was paying her to hush this story, it was days before the 2016 presidential election, if that was in order to quiet her down so that he was better able to win the election, that makes it an illegal campaign contribution. And
oh. Yeah, it was unreported. And right, yeah,
it's... That becomes an actual problem for them, like legally. So the person who's definitely in trouble is Michael Cohn, is Trump's body man, because either he signed a contract without power of attorney, in which case he could be disbarred, or, you know, he did an illegal campaign contribution. So one way or another, he fucked up, and, you know, still probably not going to bring the president down. And apparently him having an affair with a porn star only makes him more popular with his base, because he really is like stuck in the 80s. I was thinking about that this week, because not only his taste in women being like, yo, Playboy, Playmate, bro.
Right. Am I right?
But also like the steel tariffs was a thing that like people talked about in the 80s. Like that was considered a good idea back then.
Right.
Like all of his like weird media wars that he still fights, and like tabloid journalism, and his still thinking that the Central Park Five did it. Yeah. It's like,
he's in a time warp.
They should have, all these people should have taken my class again. Kaylin 101. Learning. Because I would have taught them that these are all bad things to do.
All you would have done is point to a wall that says, the year is 2018. Right. Like, whoa, shit.
That is the first thing you learn. First thing. Learning. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and we were just during the break talking about super producer Anna Hosnier was asking, like, wait, so he's going to like sit down with someone we have all these sanctions against, and this seems like it needs to be a thing that's like super drawn out. And there's actually, you know, there were sit downs between Gorbachev and Reagan during the 80s that were like super high stakes, like sit downs where, you know, everything was structured, and like just every turn of the conversation was like the fate of the world, like swinging in the balance.
Right.
And when you read like stories from people who are in the room, they're just like, talk about how intense and like well planned out the conversations were. And that's what we're going to be having with Trump.
He's probably reading The Game right now. Like, the pickup artist can get women to do anything. I'll get Kim Jong-un. I'm going to neg him. Coming out with a strong neg. I'm going to be wearing a really cool outfit.
And with like one of those hats.
He has
one of those big. Oh, I hope he comes in with one of those Dr. Seuss hats and like the goggles, the ski goggles.
Yeah, like just borderline
steampunk.
What's up, you
look like shit.
Yeah. Cool, all black outfit. So drab anyway.
And super producer Nick Stumpf was pointing out that The thing that Kim Jong-un has always wanted was to, like, have a seat at the table and be legitimized as a leader. And, you know, that was a huge bargaining chip that, you know, another president would have been like, yeah, if you stop all missile tests and if you do all these
maybe
we'll meet with you. But Trump, because he is so
he just wants
thirsty
a win.
For a win.
He needs a win. Hey, but look, man, I would love for that to be a win.
I'll fucking take it.
Let's take a nuclear holocaust off the table.
All right. Let's get into some gun stuff, some fun gun stuff, guys. Betsy DeVos. I don't know.
I like to just call her DeVos.
Betsy DeVo. Visited Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where she apparently, you know, walked around with like a group of high school students sort of trailing her, but not really interacting with the students.
The student press pool is what they called it.
Right. And then there was a very controlled interaction where they got to ask her questions and she sort of dodged those questions.
And gave them boilerplate responses. Yeah.
And then pet their therapy dog and then you know, moved on.
Then left. Right?
Yeah. And people were like, that was really unimpressive.
Yeah, well.
These kids. These damned kids.
Yeah, look, really... maybe I'm the head of the Department of Education, but I think it was really just treated like a photo op for her, it seems like. Just go in, don't really say anything substantive, take the photos. And then what's crazy is the students, again, shout out to all those kids out there who were just tweeting out like, she didn't do anything, she barely answered questions, she pet a dog.
Right.
Just in case the press tried to say anything else didn't happen. It's like, good. Let them know that it was just a very empty gesture.
Right. Yeah. High school kids did what they do best and talked shit about something. They're like, she was just like walking around school and not talking to anybody. And we just kind of followed her around. It was like super awkward.
And her outfit even wasn't cute.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Her hair is like a mess. I'm sorry.
She talked, of course, about her, you know, big idea of arming teachers. That is still her solution to the gun control question.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is to be able to, you know, give teachers the idea is that some of these teachers have guns already. So we should just give them guns at work and they'll be able to take out these school shooters. This is a scary idea for a bunch of reasons. I think we talked on a past episode, but we couldn't remember what episode it was. But just how inaccurate police are when they actually get into gunfights. Like trained police officers are, I think, 18% accurate when they get into a gunfight with criminals. And we're asking teachers to be more accurate than that because they're going to be firing guns in school buildings. Like the worst place to miss when shooting at something is probably a school building.
It's so, like the worst idea anyone's ever thought of to
really,
arm teachers.
Really bad. And I mean, you know, groups that give voice to, you know, students of color are pointing out like this is really, really dangerous because, you know, students of color don't get the fairest shake and there is a big, you know, disconnect between the percentage of teachers who are white compared to the student body. Like the teacher pool is like way whiter than the student body. And it's been shown that like that results in similar, you know, misbehavior on parts of the teachers in the same way that like having an all white police force causes people to discipline people of color like more than they would otherwise.
It also just feels like it's making guns more accessible to just like what would that look like with
where the gun
teacher
is,
yeah, where are they
is it
keeping
like in
it in
a
their
case,
desk
like where the fire
are they
axe
locking
is?
It up in there like in a safe and in which case like can
let me
you...
tell you something, when I was in high school I stole fucking everything, okay? I stole fucking quizzes out the teacher's fucking desks. I stole scales from the science lab. I just have a hard time believing that you could secure a gun in a classroom. Not that like anyone is going to steal it, but like kids are already mischievous. And again, it's not like a risk to the students that they would get their hands on it. But again, we're asking too much of teachers already. And
totally.
If when you couple that with the idea that trained law enforcement has an average accuracy of 18%. When these are people who are trained to like operate under high pressure situations, like that's an insane skill set to impose on a teacher, like thinking, oh yeah, they're going to be steely, like
yeah,
under fire.
It's putting such a huge burden on them that they shouldn't have to begin with. And then like my best friend's a teacher and he, gets like restraint training where he like learn, like if there is like a student being unruly or like, you know, starting a fight or something like that, he's trained to
get his cell phone out and video record. Oh.
Which like, to me makes sense,
right?
But to arm teachers with firearms and to just put guns into schools where like obviously that's not a place where guns should be is mind-boggling that that was anyone's idea.
Yeah, well, she's been, that was her opening gambit though when she was even being confirmed as like the head of the Department of Education, is when she was like, oh well, there in Wyoming there's a school that I think has guns because they have to fight grizzly bears,
right?
And like Chris Murphy was like, huh? Like, and then people started like laughing because he's like, yeah, I think there might be one to protect grizzlies. Cut to like people like actually finding that school where she like was talking about. And they're like, no, we don't have guns.
Right.
Just because a grizzly was found 4 miles away. Like we have a fence.
Right.
And our district has a no weapons policy because, that's the sane thing to do.
Yeah. I feel like that, you know, sometimes we talk about, wow, like years in the future, this is going to look really crazy. I feel like the solution of teachers, like arming the teachers, is going to look crazy maybe in like 3 months. Like 3 months yeah. from now, people are just going to be like, wait, was that really the solution?
It's right. crazy right now.
Right.
Like,
there was just an accidental shooting on a college campus very recently. It wasn't an armed teacher, but still, it's like those are the sorts of things that happen way more often than like mass shootings is like accidental shootings.
Yeah.
Like that, those happen all the fucking time.
Well, also people think that more guns is the solution to a safer situation because it's like, oh, if there is a crazy gunman, the more people are, the more good guys who are armed to stop them, the safer we'll all be. But like statistics show that that's not true. And like states that have like open carry laws and stuff like that, those places have more violent gun deaths. And no one's actually any safer.
Yeah, in a past show, I think after the Sutherland Springs shooting, because that was like a somewhat good guy with a gun scenario, I think there was a stat we pulled up from the FBI that said only 3% of shootings have involved a good guy with a gun.
Yeah, it almost never happens.
And yeah, exactly. And even
what
from,
was it?
Like 3%.
Yeah.
Of shootings actually, and even involve someone who is like, oh shit, I got my gun, let me do something. And even
yeah.
then, it like that, those outcomes are not.
Yeah,
consistent.
I feel like everyone saw Die Hard and they're like, oh, there's always just going to be a Bruce.
Some dude in the ventilation duct.
But that, yeah, so it's 3% of actual cases, and it's 100% of the gun culture. Like when you read a gun magazine or like watch NRA TV, it's all about like using your gun to stop the bad guy. It's all these like, you know, diehard fantasies. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, even that resource officer on campus wouldn't even bust his gun. So I mean,
right.
how many regular bystanders do you think would?
Yeah. And just talking about, you know, highly trained people, using guns, 21% of, you know, soldiers who die in battle are non-hostile deaths. So, you know, it's, they're being killed by their own, you know, fellow soldiers were.
You Wait, know. You mean 20% from friendly fire?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
What?
That's
21%
wild.
Of fallen soldiers die non-hostile deaths. More than 20% of the U.S. soldiers who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan were killed not by enemy combatants, but in non-hostile circumstances, including friendly fire, suicide, illness, and accidents. So I guess that's a big.
Big chunk. Yeah, right.
A big chunk. But,
I mean, so I bet friendly fire happens more often than anyone's willing to admit.
Right. Friendly fire is really common, and stopping bad guys with a gun is really uncommon, but we can't find out specific statistics because the gun lobby is, for some reason, they really don't want us to know.
Won't let anyone do any meaningful research on it.
That's weird.
It's
always
any
the people with truth
research.
On their side who just stop
hey,
all
man.
Research.
Post-truth, baby. We're
yeah,
in the
exactly.
post-truth era.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been a lot of editorials by soldiers who are trained to use these weapons, these assault rifles, who are like, you do not want these in schools. around children.
Or stressed out teachers.
Right, or stressed out teachers. Yeah, there was also a teacher who was like, yeah, I am in charge of 32, you know, 7-year-olds. I don't want the added responsibility of, you know, having a gun and not shooting them.
Right.
Because, no. But
or going through that.
Yeah, yeah, Caitlin, you were saying that, like, you've just thinking back on your teachers, like, you've had many that.
Yeah, there was I was in art class one time, and a student was just like being unruly, and the teacher snapped and basically threw him against a wall.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
And like, and obviously he was fired after that. But just like, think about that same teacher, or you know, someone like him that just
absolutely
snaps and then has access to a gun, and like.
By far the most problematic behavior that I've seen was a teacher bullying like a mentally handicapped student.
God.
Like,
damn.
Just for an entire school year, just like shitting on him and like turning to the class for yucks. Like,
whoa.
Yeah. So like,
horrifying.
Yeah. Like teachers, it doesn't seem like a great solution. But we do have some breaking news on this, specific issue. Florida just passed a bill. Miles, I think you have the details.
Well, Governor Rick Scott,
who was initially against the idea of arming teachers, finally came to his senses.
Till the NRA fucking
good for him.
Gave him a call. They just signed, that really whack bill, into law that, I mean, look, a lot of people were pushing for a straight up assault rifle ban.
Right.
And no, the NRA owns Florida, basically. So the most they were able to do was create a 3-day waiting period for people who wanted to buy long guns. They raised the minimum age now from 18 to 21. So now
that's good.
You got to be able to at least be able to buy a steel reserve to 1140 if you want to buy that AR-15. So at least you're the same age now. And also to begin training teachers to be armed. So that was cool. And there was a lot of people were talking about like how they poison pilled that bill because that was the only way they could get Democrats to not vote for it and be like, aha, did you see how they didn't vote for that? Only
right.
Because we insisted we arm teachers. So yeah, a lot of political gamesmanship going on, but yeah, so at least they signed something.
Yeah.
And I think that's how people are gonna have to look at this. It's gonna happen incrementally. But you know, we gotta keep on putting pressure on people to actually like have some real meaningful gun control legislation.
Yeah. But when you say that the NRA owns Florida, like there's a profile of this NRA, I guess she is the president or was the president of the NRA and is like one of the leading lobbyists in Florida. Her name is Marion Hammer. They just did a profile of her and her history and sort of legacy of policy in Florida in The New Yorker. And it's astounding.
They call her the real governor of Florida, don't
right.
they? Or something like that.
She'll like email like high up government officials and be like, here, print this out for me. Like she runs shit. People
wow.
are terrified of this woman. She is 79 years old and just
happy International Women's Day.
No
yesterday.
Shit from nobody. Yeah.
Print
so,
that shit and read it on the air. Oh God. I mean, I like to think that she's talking like your jail cellie or something.
Right.
Something crazy.
So, speaking of the NRA, so memberships are apparently spiking, or at least Google searches for how to join the NRA are spiking, and they have pointed to this to, you know, indicate it's just the out of touch liberals who are worried about guns and gun control. Whereas there's a lot of statistics and polling that indicates that actually most gun owners are actually for increased gun control.
Yeah.
It's just NRA members who take this to be sort of a tribal issue. But a story that's now coming out or getting some coverage that I've talked about for a long time on this show is the idea of suicide as being sort of the secret reason that we should all be for more gun control. So 2/3 of gun deaths in America are actually suicides. And I think people, when they hear that, are like, yeah, but those people are going to kill themselves one way or another. Like if you take away their guns, they're going to, find a bridge to jump off of. But first of all, that's just not true. Yeah, so they did a study of 500 people who were stopped either right before they jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge or who survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and 94% of them didn't try it again. They didn't go on to kill themselves. It's just
well, they probably got the mental health help that they needed.
Right,
right, right. After.
Yeah.
Then, and then, yeah.
Yeah, and so the reason – another story that I liked – to talk about. I love talking about suicide, you guys. And there's this thing called the British coal gas study.
Yeah. All right.
You were ready for that. Miles had that one locked and loaded. He was like, no, it's great. You've only talked about it like seven times so far on the podcast.
It's worth bringing up because it underlines the point you're trying to make.
So, for the first half of the 20th century, like a third of all suicides in England were from people putting their head in the oven because they used this stuff called coal gas to heat ovens, and it was just incredibly lethal. You just turned the oven on and, you know, put your head in it and you were dead like a couple minutes later. And then by the early 70s, those ovens had been phased out and they had replaced those ovens with, you know, the type we have now where if you stick your head in an oven now, you won't die because it uses not coal gas. And so when they made that change, the suicide rate dropped by a third in the UK and it never went back up. And so people who have looked at this have figured out that it's like access to something with which you can kill yourself is incredibly influential on whether you kill yourself.
Right.
Having a basically an execution chamber in these people's kitchens just made it so that people were like, well, you know, I'm feeling really, really shitty right in this moment, and they would kill themselves. So, and when that option went away, all of those lives just didn't end. Like those lives that would have ended just didn't end. And the only thing that is like even more certain of ending your life than coal gas is guns. Guns are, you know, the most successful way of committing suicide. Like if you look, they actually have charts, and because I'm a weird person, I've looked at these charts, and like wrist cutting is successful 6% of the time. Overdosing on non-prescription drugs is effective 6% of the time. Overdosing on prescription drugs intentionally 12% of the time in terms of like when people do this. This is how often they actually succeed in killing themselves. Using a gun is successful between 99 and, you know,
89%.
Yeah, 89%.
So it's not that like 6% of suicides are from people who cut their wrists. It's that the people who try to cut their wrists to commit suicide, it's only successful.
Only 6% of the time.
Okay,
actually
got it.
Effectively do it.
Got it.
And whereas people who try and use a gun, like, succeed almost every time because guns are just so incredibly dangerous. It's like having a button in your house that you can press and just be like, okay, my life's over. Like, there, that's an irrevocable decision that you have access to when you have a gun in the house. And, you know, there are just all these examples also, like, of people who are like really happy and don't, you know, there are places I've seen cover this. A lot of the places I've seen cover this have talked about it as, you know, suicide is a severe mental health issue. It's something that happens to people with severe mental health problems. And when somebody commits suicide, the coverage you always see is like, look for warning signs, guys. And that is the case for some suicides, that like it is a premeditated thing where it's someone who has like incredibly difficult mental health issues. And but sometimes it is somebody who, like, there's a story of a kid who, you know, his dad was like, he's a really happy kid, wasn't being bullied at school. He got word that he did bad on a homework assignment, and 20 to 30 minutes later, he shot himself and killed himself. Like, it's just, people aren't always rational, and you have a instrument that will end your life, like, without fail.
Right.
And I don't know. It seems like it's the best argument for controlling guns and keeping guns, you know, out of people's hands.
Because Tucker Carlson two nights ago was talking about how, like, you know, masculinity is dying in this country. And he pointed the fact that a lot of suicides are overwhelmingly men. Mm-hmm. But he didn't frame that in the gun control debate. Mm-hmm. He was more saying that the liberal media is ruining men. But it's just interesting that, like, yeah, people are even aware of certain issues, but we choose to sort of look at them differently or the root causes differently. Along with, obviously, this piecemeal legislation that's happening in Florida, I mean, there are also things about, like, gun violence restraining orders that's kind of gaining momentum, and where people who are concerned about someone's well-being, or maybe they're talking in ways that seem like they're a threat to themselves or other people, can actually call the police and, you know, essentially have them come and take their guns away because they are a danger to themselves or other people.
Wait, so violate their God-given Second Amendment right?
Yeah, but look, take the guns first, due process later, because let's, yeah, so essentially, if you know.
Yeah, so this is sort of a new idea or something that I at least hadn't heard of prior to the recent gun control debates, and it's basically the idea of a restraining order that temporarily takes guns away from people, right?
Right. It's been effective in certain instances. There were people who, like, disgruntled employees were talking very, very provocatively about possibly shooting their, you know, workplace or praising the Vegas shooter. And their coworkers, like, filed for one of these gun violence restraining orders, and they came, and this man, like, willingly gave up his guns and was like, yeah, maybe.
He's like, yeah, you might have a point.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, yeah, look, stuff is happening. But again, I think we're in the very early stages. So at the very least, there's something happening.
Right.
That reminds me of a friend of mine, Bragg. I have another friend.
wow. Who is single or in a relationship?
Relationship.
Oh, God.
But I tolerate them anyway.
Oh.
He is a social worker, like mental health professional, and he got a job with the LAPD where he basically rides along with cops who answer calls for – I'm not sure what all – of the different types of calls that they respond to that he comes along on, but it's stuff like people who are threatening suicide, people who might have had like a domestic dispute. And basically he comes along and talks to the people who are, you know, threatening suicide and things like that. And because he's a mental health professional, right, he's much more qualified than, you know, probably your average police officer to deal with something like that. And it's just like, why hasn't that been a thing all right along?
Wow.
So yeah. I thought that was pretty great when I learned that he got that job.
Well, yeah. Because
this is like a new program, I think, LAPD.
And a very logical solution or right, a thing that makes sense. Like, yeah, police, they enforce the law. But right, yeah, we're not then tasking them like, okay, you also have to go to psychotherapy. You need to become a psychotherapist and grievance counselor.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right. It's almost like making teachers also be like gun wielding cops
right,
almost.
Exactly.
It's like let the people who are professionals at the different things like also.
Mm. Yeah, because cops have enough
their
to worry
expertise
about. Yeah.
Right. So
like throwing
know
punk kids out of, you know, parks for skateboarding. And
now, when your friend is talking to these people who are disturbed, what kind of gun is he holding on them?
Right. And exactly.
He's got a major assault
a major
rifle
one.
A major
he's got one of those major
he's
guns.
He's got like
what a gun
three
nut
Uzis.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the Bloid Watch.
Bloid Watch.
And we're back. And it's time for Bloid Watch.
Bloid Watch.
Actually, before, do we want to check in with Stacey Dash real quick?
Yeah, let's check in.
About her political.
So, guys, yes. I think last week we were talking, or were you here? Was this when you were here? Maybe when we first talked about Stacey Dash? Or
no,
was that
no,
during...
I was out.
Oh, so this was Sweeps Week, as we call it last
Sweeps
week. last week we all found out Stacey Dash, Dion from Clueless, who has had some very, very problematic takes on, God, I mean, can we add them all up? She thought we didn't need Black History Month. We don't need BET. So many things
she
I could go
that
on.
Terrible Oscars joke.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Anyway, let's just put it down to the fact that she is trying to figure out a way to be in the limelight. So she's running for Congress in California's 44th district, which is like parts of Compton, Linwood, North Long Beach, San Pedro. And she's running as a Republican in a very solidly Democratic district, which
ooh
shows people, oh, you're probably just trying to get on the news.
Mm.
And she did a good job because Ari Melber was kind enough to have her on his show on MSNBC. And he asked her a little bit, you know, just want to feel out the candidate for some of her, like, policy ideas.
Should Obamacare be fully repealed?
Yes.
And what happens, great, in your view, then, to the people who lose health insurance?
Well, they'll get, I mean, there's, of course, there'll be another solution, but Obamacare is not working. We know that.
What is the other solution?
Well, that's where I'm going to go and listen and pay attention and have a dialogue to come up with a solution.
But you won't, and I have to do this with all candidates, I have to ask, so you won't tell us yet, though, what the solution is?
No.
All right, moving on.
She was like, no. like he asked some inflammatory shit.
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's right,
motherfucker. So, Stacey Dash, how much do you weigh? You going to answer that question? No.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But he's really asking, oh, okay, so if Obamacare is bullshit, what's your answer? I have to tell you.
Right.
But it's better.
It's a secret.
It's a secret, right. And I'm going to listen.
Hey, it worked for Trump. He had those secret plans to take out ISIS.
I love Obamacare. I got so many cavities filled for free.
Ooh.
In my mouth.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, and it's one of those things, too.
Shout out to Obamacare.
That fucking, that rhetoric of Obamacare is failing, like, that's getting so tired because, like, all the polling and, like, data shows, like, people are only enrolling more and more and see it in more and more favorably. So, I mean, that's cool. She's running on, like, 2010 Tea Party talking points.
All right. It's time for our weekly Bloid Watch.
Bloid Watch.
Where we look at the covers of the tabloids that people's eyes are passing by in grocery store checkout aisles to see. And we actually look at the headlines and then see what the articles are actually saying on the insides of the magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And just to reiterate, like we do every week, David Pecker is the guy who owns the National Enquirer, and most of these magazines are actually owned by the same company.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically.
Essentially.
And he is a huge Trump supporter, longtime Trump friend. And, you know, he was one of the people he bought a different Playboy playmate who Trump had an affair with. He bought her story from her and then killed it so that, like, it wouldn't come out. So this is basically a look into the inside of Trump's brain in some cases. For instance, this week's National Enquirer, as scandals rage about Trump and his past affairs, they have a headline that is Donald and Melania fight back.
Oh.
They fight back at the liberal media who are trying to break them apart. Not they don't fight each other.
Because the media made him unfaithful.
Right, to her.
As someone who's pro-single people, I'm a huge part of this, trying to break them up.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you go on the inside, there is a picture of Barack Obama and CIA Director John Brennan, who masterminded the entire Trump-Russia hoax.
Wow.
Apparently that has something to do with the Stormy Daniels thing. And I just want to read this first couple sentences here because it's almost definitely like written by Trump himself, the way it's written. It starts,
Dear Diary.
Donald Trump is surrounded by leakers, traitors, and axe-grinding media who have so poisoned his presidency that he and First Lady Melania are sleeping in separate bedrooms. Like,
whoa.
What?
It's all these leaky
it's
leakers.
It's not fair. Yeah, so it's starting out by blaming the media for Melania being mad at him for having an affair with Playmates.
I mean, the prose is just exquisite. It's wonderful writing. I love
right.
it.
It's all written the same way. They love alliteration.
Mm.
They love alliteration in these magazines.
A lot of allegories and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then another claim that is made on the cover is what Ryan is hiding from Kelly and America about Ryan Seacrest, new hush money sex scandal, and he just paid a former employee just not to gossip about him, like after she left. So there's actually no information on that on the inside.
But they do a good job of implying that maybe there is information within the pages.
Yeah. Okay, magazine. Okay. On the cover, they say Ryan's scandal, his side of the story.
Paul Ryan?
No, Ryan Seacrest again. And we don't get any such thing. We just get everything we already heard about that there was an investigation and they found not enough evidence to support the accusations. And then some people saying he's a great person to work with and other people being like, now and somebody supporting his accuser's claims. So no information there.
So they're merely reporting
right
on what's happening. Okay.
There is palpable hatred for Jennifer Lawrence, though, in OK Magazine.
Why?
I don't know. You can just tell the way it's written. They're like, another bomb from Jennifer Lawrence. And then they're like, by now her fans are starting to see her comments as bratty, spoiled, and rude. You can tell when they like use like three adjectives yeah. that they're like what they're going for. So people are hating on her lately. So yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. Why are they
hate? I mean, I don't really keep up with her. Is it just because like she does like the I'm accessible and like I'm a hometown person?
I think just because they're bored and out of stuff to
right.
care about. Well, out of takes.
Well, let me take you into the world of the Royals because yes. the Globe, man, fuck, man, Harry is in some deep shit. So apparently he has a love child, okay, and it's about
I knew
to
it.
It's about to tear him and Meghan the fuck apart because when I open the page, let's go to page two. Look at this child. He has red hair.
Knew it.
That's a paternity
test. Resemblance.
That is what they. Uncanny. That's a paternity test to me. The child has red hair, so he is quote a chip off the block. Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, when they go in there, the story is basically that someone sent a letter that was addressed to him, and just said it was a picture of the child and said, "This is your son," and that's what they're saying
from the national. I mean, not from the national
from the Globe, part. Which is right. just as garbage. But then they're saying the baby mom is demanding $5,000 a month in hush money. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, last week the Inquirer said that Harry's dad was some other redhead, and today now Harry's the child or has a love child that's redheaded. So by next week, the love child will also have a child that is redheaded.
Well, as we know, all redheaded people are related.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And I think whoever was here last week, I think Jamie was here, was saying that maybe next week it'll say Carrot Top is Harry's.
yeah, I was going to say that Joseph Kennedy III is probably his love child.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Actually, Joseph Kennedy III is 4 years older than Harry. So Harry is actually his love child.
So is what we say in Japan. And then in Us Weekly, it just says, you know, the next Fergie and Diana, new royal sisters, how Katie and Meghan are so booed up. Great. Boring. I want to hear about salacious shit, like how Terry Hatcher is basically homeless.
Right.
In Star Magazine. So the Desperate Housewife, they said she moves from $5 million mansion into this van. First of all, I don't know if the mansion is worth $5 million. Inside, they said it was only worth three something. So I don't know where they got $5 million. Huh. But she's, again, they're saying they had photos of her in a VW, like hippie bus. And they're using that to say she lives in a van, and I mm-hmm. guess she's renting out her home.
She looks completely fine and normal in the pictures, too. It's not like she's like looks like she hasn't bathed in weeks.
No,
it just looks like
you can see like
Terry Hatcher is yeah. sitting in a.
It looks like based on the groceries in the car, she's shopping at Whole Foods.
Right.
So I think she's okay. But again, they just love to just say broken homeless.
Uh-huh.
And then Sharon Stone fell down, so they say she collapsed
uh-huh.
because she did have a stroke. But again. The photo looks like she fell and has like a good spirit about it. Also, Lisa Marie Presley, $17,000 weekly drug habit. How she blew through Elvis's $1 billion fortune.
Damn.
Again, I don't know. And Gwen and Miranda humiliated, dumped at the same time. I didn't realize that Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton split up. Is that news? Does anybody know that?
I don't
know
about they that. Did.
Does anybody
I
care?
Think they're like married or something.
I mean, because Blake Shelton is great. We love his Twitter.
Shout out to my gays.
Where are my gays at? Do y'all eat Skittles? Because it's a rainbow. Which is like some shit he actually tweeted.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then in the National Examiner to keep up with what old people, because the Examiner is only for the elderly. Sad last days where they're just saying Priscilla Presley's dying, Val Kilmer's dying, Angie Dickinson's dying, Bob Barker's dying, Terry Dodd.
Sure she is. Her daughter's $17,000 a month drug habit must be killing her.
Yeah, again, and then you can buy some like weird Elvis trains inside. So, and also, Oswald didn't kill JFK. I feel bad for the elderly people who believe this because are they constantly having their minds blown? Like, you think there's probably like maybe five people in this country who actually take this as 100% fact.
Mm.
And I'm going, well, fuck, if it wasn't him and last week it was this other person. I just want closure.
I bet right? it's more people than you think who
right?
like, take all that at face
But then
value.
They must be on a fucking roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
To be buying the same shit week in, week out. And to, like, I'm not joking. Every other week there is a JFK Oswald thing with new twists and new turns where they'll never bother to, like, track out, like, well, this is the state of things as we knew it last week and this is where we are now. It's just a new thing. for you to get crazy about.
Get crazy.
And also, well, here, one last thing, because you guys have been tweeting at us, hashtag TDZ News, so we can look at some of the local news around you and we can talk about it. Thank you to everybody who submitted stuff. We always look at it and we will try and fit stuff in whenever appropriate and necessary. And I just want to shout out one of our listeners out in Montreal and Quebec. I don't know if you are from Quebec, but the story is from Quebec. Dabernac, as they curse out there. There's a story basically about how around 250 doctors and other healthcare professionals have opposed a proposed pay raise for themselves because they're like, nurses need this money more than we do. And they were basically getting in the way of their own pay raise, to look out for people that they saw were on the front lines of the healthcare fight. So wow. Shout out to Based Canada again, Jesus. Because, man, what do you think you'll ever see doctors be like, no, we're paid too much here. Right. God bless y'all for having a heart out there and a little bit of an uplifting story for everybody.
I don't think I'd trust them to operate on me.
Because you'd be like, what kind of car you got?
Yeah, exactly.
A Hyundai? Oh, my. Right. You don't even know what a good car is.
Yeah. And also, lastly, RIP Biggie Smalls on the 20-year anniversary of his death, I think.
98. Ooh.
Shit. Caitlin, old. It has been a pleasure having you on our show.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Why, thank you, Caitlin.
Oh, why, thank you.
Where can people find you, follow you, listen to you?
On Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at Caitlin Durante. You can check out my podcast that I co-host with frequent Zeitgeist guest Jamie Loftus. It's called The Bechdel Cast. We talk about the portrayal of women in film and how it's usually not very good. And then you can follow that on at Bechdel Cast on Twitter.
It is a wonderful podcast.
Thank you.
When
so
you have
much.
Me on?
So soon. Jamie's right. Out of town right now, but when she gets back.
Yeah, we keep saying this.
You know what? I'm going to email you right now.
Oh, thank you, Caitlin. See, you're good. You're a better person than I.
Miles.
Oh, me? Well, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
I didn't
follow
ask
me.
You that shit, man. I was just saying your name.
Oh. All right, later.
Hey, congrats on 100 episodes, man. Where can people find and follow you?
Oh, so I'll say it again. On Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
Cool. You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the sources of the information that we talked about today. That is going to do it for this week. Miles, do you have a song for us
out? I do. It's Friday. I want everybody to get their shoulders dipping and their heads bouncing. This is a track by Azalea Banks called ATM Jam. However, it is a remix by Kaytranada, because this one actually goes way harder than the Pharrell beat, which I'm surprised to even say that. But yes, this one goes harder. And this one's ATM Jam, Kaytranada remix.
Is Pharrell losing it? He just made that Pharrell, Man of the Woods
look,
album.
I mean, look, let's be real. He needs Chad Hugo next to him to really do his best work. Mm. Him as the Neptunes, they do good work.
All right.
But even then, you know, they had their heyday.
Yeah. And also no shame in being outdone by Kaytranada. He's fucking awesome.
He's next.
All right. That is going to do it for this week. We will be back next week, and we'll talk to you guys then. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Dolly, by the Barbie. I can admit I like the party. I spent the grip, I swipes the Cardi. When I heist on my drip, my pricey gummy. I'm the swami, I feel hip cat. I'm freaky fit that I can rip it. Ice on a wrist like ice a fish jet. When I like with a bitch that's spicy, get that.
I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. You a badass bitch, a badass bitch. That don't get swallowed in that fat ass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. You a badass bitch, a badass bitch. That don't get swallowed in that fat ass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do.
Hey, yo, P. Do that freaky jam on the beat. Shitty with that butter, shit that bone beat. Did you trippy, did you double do that, that bone thing? Flicky cheeky with sweaters, with that bone thing. If you cheeky chatter, check, I get her own cheese. If you chicken with that head, or get something that won't be with the official with that whole sleeve. Like if you had to wish that with that long.
I got racks, racks, racks at ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks at ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do.
you a badass bitch, a badass bitch. And don't get swallowed in that badass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. And you a badass bitch, a badass bitch. And don't get swallowed in that badass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do.
The fur, I'm in the house like nice suburb. Pipes on a pout, my pipe, the perp. Peter piping about my pint for sure. I'm the mermaid, rhymes the nurse. I'm little red, ride, ride the verse. My shimmy shakes inside the shirt. Should a dyke and a gay guy try to flirt?
I got racks, racks, racks at ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks at ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. You a badass bitch, a badass bitch. That don't get swallowed in that fat ass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks at ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. Are you a badass bitch, a badass bitch. That don't get swallowed in that fat ass bitch. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. They shooting in the parking lot. Everybody getting low. They shooting in the parking lot. They ain't where you wanna go. Now stand by soldier, stand by soldier. And let the working motherfucker dance like a soldier. Stand by soldier, stand by soldier. And let the working motherfucker dance like a soldier.